Hey, and welcome to Builders, a podcast from BetaWorks Studios about the amazing people who build things. The makers and the doers, not just the talkers. The people that are helping shape the world we live in. My name is Layla Aweda, and I'll be your guide. In Builders, we bring you a diverse mix of thinkers and leaders from the startup ecosystem. All of the shows are recorded live at BetaWorks Studios, our club for builders, located in the Meatpacking District of New York City. If you want to know what a club for builders really is, just visit betaworks-studios.com to learn more. But these podcasts are a pretty good reflection of life in studios. One week, it might be a discussion on crypto. The next, on how technology is affecting music festivals. This episode, featuring creative entrepreneur Jules Earhart, is an impassioned look at the advertising and larger creative industry. Jules ran a digital product agency called Us2 for 9 years. Us2 works for clients, but also builds their own products, most notably the mobile game Monument Valley, which was named Apple's Game of the Year and also featured on House of Cards, which was cool until, you know, the whole Kevin Spacey's multiple sexual assault allegations coming to light. Jules has spent the last few years thinking about the relationship between the traditional industry and the startup and VC industry. He recently launched a new studio called Factory. Jules has also written 2 very long but very worth it pieces on where things have gone and where they're going. You can see them in the show notes. This talk is sort of a synopsis of those 2 talks, just in case you don't have 2 spare hours. But you should read them, one has a great soundtrack. He starts off by painting a general picture about how the economy is in great shape, but advertising clients are spending less and less, and agencies are finding it harder and harder to make profits. Less profits have meant that agencies have looked elsewhere to make money. So in many cases, that means selling to people with big pockets, the management consultancies. Jules looks at this consolidation and where that might end up. He's not bullish on that.
Has anyone ever done work and had it presented by a commercial person and got the feed, not presented it yourself, come back and they give you their feedback or the feedback, whatever they pretend it is. Raise your hand if that's happened to you. And how's that felt, good or bad? Shit, okay, yeah, shit, okay. And I think, imagine that on steroids at a management consultancy or at a fucking global accounting firm and stuff like that.
He talks a lot about working conditions and what some future models might be.
I truly believe there's only 5 hours of creativity in a human being in a day. Now, if you actually embrace that fact, that you're going to get 4 hours or 5 hours of juice out of the orange, then there's no fucking logic in squeezing the orange and getting pith and breaking the orange because you won't have an orange the next day.
So this is Jules on the chaos of the agency world and what your next move should be. This session was put together by Tina Yip, who runs a group called Strategist, who hold monthly sessions for agency thinkers. Shout out to Tina. Thanks so much for hosting.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming. And thank you, Tina. Thank you, BetaWorks, for hosting us. I keep doing that. John keeps it BetaWorks. It's the American way. Just to announce, I'm transitioning from a career in agency into a career focused on kind of the venture and startup space. And just talking about the space briefly, I bumped into an old acquaintance, Tim Rogers, back there, who's in the corner there looking mysterious, lurking. Who has also transitioned out of working purely in the agency space, looking at the venture space and startups. And I think this space in particular is a fantastic location to kind of transition, so to speak. So I bumped into Tim, I didn't know he was gonna be here. And then David was listening to us talk, he's sitting right there, runs a fantastic startup which is focused on helping invest in your children's future. So a bit like, I guess, Acorns for your kids' investment account. He was listening and he said, hang on a second, what are you talking about? And then we sat down and had a really good half hour conversation. And that's, I guess, an illustration of this place, but I think the power of forum and community, which is something I wrote about in State of Digital Nation at the end, that I think luck is, or serendipity is something you can curate, and you can do that with physical spaces. And I think the vision that John and Ben and the others have here for you know, BetaWorks Studios is the same, that those kind of occurrences take place. So, I've had an interesting afternoon here. So just by way of introduction, who do I owe an hour and 9 minutes of their life back to? And who's read State of the Digital Nation 1 or 2? Can you raise your hands? Okay, thank you. I owe you. So just to give you a bit of context for who I am, my journey, before we kind of get into it. What we want to try and get out of today is looking at getting a, like a meta perspective of what's been happening in the industry that we've all been a part of in various ways, and kind of drawing some logical conclusions from all those inputs, and then asking some really deep questions about what it means for us. So I'll take you through kind of summary of the article, saving you 69 minutes of your life. But there's a very good music soundtrack to it if you do actually read it. What we'll do is have a conversation at the other end, because we've got a lot of really interesting people here from a lot of different backgrounds and different stages of their career. And I think it'd be really valuable while we've got this intimate, low light, circular setup to actually learn from each other. So I think that's going to be the kind of second half of things. And strategist things are already happening in the back there. Post-it notes are being grouped. So I'm going to spend about 20 minutes or so kind of going through some of the themes, which are running through State of the Digital Nation. Okay, me. I'm Jules. I'm 40, and I'm 41, actually, and of the generation that's in the way for a lot of the things we'll be talking about. And I used to own a studio called Us2, which is a digital product studio. It was a nine-year journey of my life. We went from 20 people to 300 people in London and New York and in Malmo in Sweden and in Sydney. I went on this crazy rocket ship ride. I left at the end of 2016. Along some of that ride, I wrote something called State of the Digital Nation 1, which is was an overview of what I saw happening in the industry, because we all in the industry, we all talk to people and have coffees and learn information and what's happening here, who's coming and going, and what counts are being won and lost, and what clients are thinking. And I wrote something about, initially was the consolidation in the advertising industry. Lots of agencies were getting acquired. Everyone was trying to get in this kind of digital product footing, away from kind of pure kind of comms and marketing. And lots of agencies were being acquired. I think AKQA had been acquired, and then Fjord, which is a more of a product-focused shop, had been acquired. And it began this trend. And then really looked at that, saying, well, what's the opportunity within that? What does it mean for all of us amongst all the consolidation? And I spoke about the model that Us2 led, which is that of a digital product studio, which wasn't really terminology years ago. So there's a bit more understanding of it now. But it means you do digital products and services, which means design and engineering, full stack engineering and integration. We ship an actual product into the market. And it's involving, actual software development, rather than kind of messaging and comms and things like that, or pure web. And put our finger on this model called the digital product studio, which is, yes, we're doing client service work, but there's also opportunity in building your own products and services if you have that capability. And Us2, one of the products we built was called Monument Valley. I don't know if anyone's played it, but it became Apple Game of the Year and won the Apple Design Award and generated quite a lot of money for the studio. And that was born of the studio. Then we took some of that money and started doing venture work, which was we past tense, because I'm not with Us2 anymore. It's going to take me a while to stop saying we. But we took that money and we then began to do in venture work, which is taking the risk of working with a startup to deliver their product and taking an equity position in the startup. So we had this kind of magic triangle of pay for time client service, which is what we're going to be talking a bit about today, and how much of a prison island that is. Doing own product work, which in Us2's case, I think Monument Valley 1 generated $15 million, spent 2. But it was all very open source. We shared, Us2 shared all its data and how much money it made. So hopefully that others could learn. And taking some of that money to do venture work. So that's a digital product studio. That was my journey of the last near decade. I stepped out, sold my piece to the other owners at very early 2017, took a year out, and began my transition into the world of startup invention. I've always had a lot of admiration and have studied the startup studio model. BetaWorks is the founding studio of that model, but there are other studios such as Science and Expert, and of course I think there are about 300 startup studios in the world now. They're companies that help launch their own startups, and I did a study of that, and I've landed on my own take on what the opportunity is for the creative class. So my lens through my journey has pretty much been the business of creativity. What models can we build with what we know? How can we get paid as much as we should get paid? How can we build the right types of engagements and the right barriers around what we do good work? And, what upside can we generate? So that takes us to state two, which is this, which I'm going to take us through, hopefully, I think in about 15 minutes. Then I think we'll have a fruitful discussion. Is that okay with everyone? Does that make sense? Cool. And feel free to stick your hand up if I say something provocative or interesting you want to kind of jump on or have to be built on. But This photo is kind of interesting. Tina yanked it from the picture. It's a tangential theme, but I'm fascinated by the theme of agency hegemony, and hegemony being the kind of rise and fall of nations. Sorry to state the obvious, but this happens with agencies, that, you know, AKQA was once up there, it's now down there, and you have these agencies that none of us have ever heard of, but 10 years ago were like, you know, other people were kind of bowing down to. And I think this is such an interesting photo. It's from 1964 when Cassius Clay beat Sonny Liston, who was the world champion, and who was, you know, Cassius Clay wasn't Muhammad Ali at the time, but shortly after the fact he changed his name and converted, so to speak. And what's interesting about that is I think there's a really interesting thing there, that I think up-and-coming agencies and the studios should have all the reverence for the established players or the champ that a young title contender does, which is complete respect, but also at the same time, none at all. And I hope that people look to us too, if it had any kind of standing, just like I did. I looked at the AKQAs and the RGAs of the world, and we were nothing, when us too was nothing. And so we're gonna knock them on their ass. I think that's the energy we need to get this constant renewal, to get new talent and new challenging ideas. That's what we need to come at it with. I think too much reverence for the status quo is bad. Too much reverence for the leaders in the space is bad. And I think we have to kind of have this kind of quite pugilative attitude to it. So, right, let's get into it. And I'm going to refer to some notes because there's a bunch of stats and things here. So the theme of the second state of Digination 2 is called Venture Road. So the first theme of the first one was about what's the agency space amongst all this madness taking place in the consolidation? What models can we build that help us get to a kind of prosperous place? The second one was my situation, which is, look, I've left the industry, I've left that model, and there's a lot of crazy shit going on, which we're going to go through today. And what does all this change mean for me as an individual, the atomic unit of the creative class? Now, when I talk about the creative class, someone wrote a book about it, who's more intelligent than I am, but my version of it is anyone who creates design, who creates code, who creates culture, who creates thought, or creates business models around creativity is in my creative class. So welcome everyone to my creative class. My thought was, well, look, all this madness is happening with the agency model, and we're going to go through some of it. What does all that mean to me? If I extrapolate a lot of these themes to their logical conclusion, what's my path in that? I knew I didn't want to have another agency. I knew I didn't want to be paid for time. I want to be paid for my mind, which was some clear rules I built for myself. But fundamentally, just like you probably think, I knew that as much as I love bread and want to open a bakery, and I will one day, that I didn't want to leave my tribe. And some of my journey of a year out, which is an immense privilege, was deciding whether I wanted to leave my tribe. And I decided I didn't. My tribe are the creative class, people who build things, create things. I get my energy from them. They give me energy and I can put energy into it. So if I didn't want to leave my tribe, but I didn't want to have an agency and I didn't be paid for time, which is, I think, one of the biggest problems, then what would it be? So I went on my own path of establishing a new model, which is the creative capital studio model, which is not something we're going to get too much into tonight, but my key question is, how can we leverage our creativity, and what's the intersection of capital, i.e. the vast pools of money and finance that's out there from angels, hedge funds, VCs, pension funds and others, and what we do, creativity, and how can we leverage that creativity to create business models that give us an upside? Now, it's not really important what I am deciding to do. I think if you want to find out more about it, we can talk about it, but it's also in the piece. But I think what's most interesting is going through the thought process of what this all means and drawing some conclusions, and then I think we're calling provocations back there. So let's do that. I think kind of setting the scene is important. I've kind of talked about my personal journey and the terms that I'd made for myself. What was definitely happening in the last few years is a hell of a lot of consolidation. This is why I need my list. The Accenture brought more agencies in 2017 than they brought from 2011 to 2016. So there's a huge amount of consolidation. They brought the Monkeys, Maud, Clearhead, Wirestone, Matter, Rothko, all were assimilated by the Borg. I like to call them the Borg. For any Star Trek fans, I don't really like Accenture. And I have, there's some issues we'll talk about out of it. IDEAN and Adaptive Labs sold to Capgemini. Imagine working for a fucking accountancy firm as a creative. Acne sold to Deloitte, and they were that's cool, Swedish studio. Sequence sold to Salesforce, Moment sold to Verizon here in New York, Instrument sold to MDC, Citizen sold to Ernst & Young, Ford sold to Bain, Smashing Ideas sold to Luxoft. And if you're remotely in the field of like UX, you know Alan Cooper, he's kind of the forefather of a lot of modern kind of UX thinking. He even sold his company to an Indian IT services company, which is really exciting, a field of work. So what's happened is design or creativity has been consolidated. It's been, I say, consumed nose to tail. For me, as someone in the creative class, it gives me concerns. This is perhaps one of the themes. If nearly all design capacity and creative capacity and process is centralized and homogenized, then what does that mean for variety? Because I think creativity is about new thinking and new thoughts and provocations and challenging kind of the status quo. And I think that's one big theme for me. There's this homogenization, which I think is a danger to all of us, and as well as this consolidation. So I think we've had this kind of supernova. It's growing. Everyone's been assimilated, and there's not that many independent studios left. And most companies are part of a big group structure, be it one of the big ad holding groups, which brings its own pressures. So for me, that's a big theme for me and a concern for me. So that was happening. Okay, I guess we can all accept that. And if there's this nice metaphor that if you mix all the colors of the palette together, you get a chromatic neutral, is the phrase. And I think that's the risk of what's going to happen with creativity and design. If everything gets centralized, everything gets sucked into Accenture's global design or creative process. Even working with a management consultancy, politically, it's an issue. If you think about the size of the average account for Accenture, let's say with the MTA, it's probably $100 million account. Your creative part's now $2 million of a $100 million account. The level of access you're going to get as a creative is minimal. The way the management consultancies work, they're giant fiefdoms. There's a lot of paranoia involved and kind of empire building. And there's no way on earth you're going to get the access you want to the client to do good work. You're actually going to have to go through a few layers. So that's another challenge. And what is the environment that we're trying to do our work if we're actually prevented from accessing the client or getting the right kind of access to the client and the work? If everything gets filtered through. And I think we all understand the frustration. I mean, has anyone ever done work and had it presented by a commercial person and got the feed, not presented it yourself, come back and they give you their feedback or the feedback, whatever they pretend it is? Raise your hand if that's happened to you. And how's it felt, good or bad? Shit, okay, yeah, shit, okay. And I think, imagine that on steroids at a management consultancy or at a fucking global accounting firm and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. So some context before we get into kind of, like, I like to call it 10 rounds on the ad industry's malaise, is we are in the middle of a global economic boom, thanks Obama. We recover from the crash and the economy's booming and it's unprecedented levels of growth and stability. So I'd like to hold on to this as we talk about what the advertising and marketing industry and the wider industry is currently going through. Because if you think things are good now, which they aren't, then just wait for the economy to turn. So 2015 and 2016, they were peak years for the holding companies in terms of valuations. Hands up who's part of an agency in a holding company? Higher. Okay, cool. So you're probably going to feel some of these wins. All the values peaked in 2015, 2016, and they're all been sliding. I think around 20%, 10 to 20% on average. Now, who cares? It's a fucking price of on the stock market. The problem comes when the only job of the CEO of that holding group is to demonstrate value to shareholders. It's not for you to do the best possible work and have the best possible relationships and get the best, most interesting projects. It's to demonstrate growth by any means necessary. And they can do that by purchasing agencies because it looks good. We've brought this pool of clients, we've brought this pool of talent, we've synergized and all the other bullshit they speak about when they assimilate companies. But then I think you end up with bullshit like Marcel, which is a cynical, in my mind, a cynical ploy to demonstrate some level of expertise in the field that they actually have none in, the publicist group, in terms of building an AI assistant to centralize the resources of the entire global workforce. I know a fair amount about that project for one reason or another, and I know, and I actually put it out there, that the whole thing was presented to the world without checking with one person who was going to deliver the work. Now, that was my thesis. Turns out that that's not far from the truth. Imagine that landing in your desk. Oh, by the way, we just announced to the world and our shareholders that we're going to have a global AI-driven voice-activated platform that will bring together our global workforce, and we're going to deliver it in a year, and do you mind doing it? Yeah, which is literally what fucking happened. So, again, if you think about empathy for the kind of the creative class, this is the kind of shit we have to face. So WPP had their worst year in a decade last year. There's noise. I personally feel they're not going to be around in a year or two. It's definitely in their current state, which is going to mean something because a lot of talent is locked up in there. Most of us know that the large FMCG clients are reducing their ad spend. I think, who was it? It was P&G want to reduce their $10 billion budget by 50% over the coming 4 years. Unilever lopped off 30% without even trying. There have been cases of major brands switching off, I think, $200 million ad spend and having no effect on their sales. There's been no difference in their sale after they switched that lever off. So what we're seeing is work flooding out of agencies, going in-house, people looking for better value. And there's a central theme I'll kind of touch on as to why that's happening. But there's definitely a trend. There's less work out there. And lots of stuff's going in-house. The numbers are clear. All the leaders from these people who've given out these giant budgets have publicly said they're not getting the value they want, and they're actually reassessing their position. There's been some shady shit going on. There's the US Department of Justice investigation into mis-selling, or rigging by ad agencies. I'll do a campaign for Dove. I'll pretend I'm going to four production houses, getting four quotes. I've already arranged who I'm doing it with, and I'm getting a cutback. And you've wasted three other agencies' time who think they might get their work. They probably think it's their big chance, worked a couple of weekends to pitch for it, didn't get it because it was all a fix. The fix is in. If that pisses you off, console yourself. The Department of Justice will get to the people doing it, and they're probably going to go to fucking jail, and they should, because it is not cool to waste people's time. And it's illegal, which is the other thing. So working conditions. I'm 41. When I started, it was like, get in early, stay late. Look, we're all in having our kind of Stockholm syndrome. It's fantastic. All the work we're doing is really important and worth it. But I actually got to the point with us too that I became so focused on, like, I've realized something as someone in the creative space. I truly believe there's only 5 hours of creativity in a human being in a day. 10. You say 10 or 10 minutes? You've got 10 hours of creativity in you. Okay. Tina's special. I got you. Anyway, so I was out in the West Coast at this conference for people, leaders of like leading tech companies, like real heads of product at Google and Facebook and stuff. And I was in the room and I managed to ask everyone that question. Hands in the air, who thinks how many hours of creativity a human being has in them? We all, like, the hands were all, like, most hands around 4 to 5 hours. Now, if you actually embrace that fact, that you're going to get 4 hours or 5 hours of juice out of the orange, then there's no fucking logic in squeezing the orange and getting pith and breaking the orange, because you won't have an orange the next day. It won't grow again. So we realized that at us too, and we modeled our whole business model on it, which is, you know, if we do over 4 hours of work for you as a client, you're going to be charged for a day, even if it's 4 hours and 10 minutes. Because clocking hours and saying we did 12 hours today is nonsense, which meant people left, you know, by six or before. And I was initially, years ago, I look at people leaving at six and go, oh, you fucking clock watcher. And then it got to the point years later of just being really fucking proud that we had a place that we sold the work in the right way, not always, sold the work in the right way, defended a certain way of doing things and charged the right way that people could have a life outside of what they do. That's not common in the advertising marketing industry. Where overwork 60, 70 hour work weeks are pretty common. Working weekends is pretty common. In Japan, we had this sad issue with Dentsu, with someone dying from overwork. They literally died because they were being pushed too hard. I've lived and worked in Japan for 6 years. I know in that culture, it's very easy to do it, but I think the pressures of the industry kind of added on top of that. Now, when Dentsu tried to correct this, realizing they literally killed someone, they had a fall in their global profits, because guess what? If your business model relies on people doing 60-hour work weeks to make your money, to sell your units of time, and you get them to do it in 50 hours, then you need 20% more people to do the same work, which means your costs go up 20%. So you kind of get what happens. It's pretty fucking obvious. So the industry, I think, is like taking itself down this alleyway of getting itself to a price point because of some other factors as well, and the working conditions that don't make sense, but they're very hard to extract themselves out of in the face of falling profits. So on the supply side, we were speaking before about this, I'm not going to use the word, but this younger generation, not millennials, I didn't say millennials, but that generation, for some reason, appeared to value their well-being and their self-worth be above that of the company, which is a complete mindfuck to old people. Like, and there are some insurrection, rebellions. I think we had a, where was it? It was PwC. Which, I mean, accountant, those kind of firms are notorious for late working hours for the partners. There was a rebellion amongst from the kind of new influx of people who aren't millennials but are the new generation. And they actually pushed back and said, we're not going to work these hours, and they had to change their practices. So that's a big factor. So you've got this whole world of, you know, unhealthy working practices and poor output, but also a generation now that will not accept that, which I think is fucking fantastic, and you shouldn't, because fucking fried chicken ads are not worth your life force or spending time with your family. Interestingly, last year, the number of people working in the ad industry declined for the first time during an economic boom. It's never happened. During a period of economic expansion, it's never happened, so it's another big signal. And then television ad sales fell 7.8% in 2017, the steepest drop in the last 20 years. Another big problem, big tech titans. I've got a lot of friends. Anyone work at Google or Facebook? No? Okay. I've got a lot of friends there. They're capturing 90% of all growth in the market is being captured by Google or Facebook. I think also they own, I can't remember, it was like 70% of the ad spend in the US is also owned by them as well. And it's growing. Every single bit of growth is being consumed by them, which is starving people who aren't them of valuable revenue. So ad blockers, 2/3 of people who aren't millennials, but the next generation of people who are going to run the planet have ad blockers. Google launched a new version of Chrome, which is used by, it is hard to remember all these statistics, is used by 56% of all web pages are viewed by Chrome with an inbuilt ad blocker. People are filtering advertising from their lives. The messaging that is put in front of them is being filtered. And we also have the rise of death of linear television. So less people are watching actual TV, more people are streaming. They have the option to pay to avoid advertising. So in my mind, in the future, the only people who experience advertising will be older, poorer people, which isn't exactly an attractive segment for us to sell to clients. So that's a thing as well. The point for me there is there's a whole bunch of shit happening we need to keep an eye out on. These are huge forces affecting the industry that a lot of us work in. And remember the context, the economy is fucking booming. The clients we work for are never making more money than they have now. In fact, even with the corporate tax breaks, with the fucked up tax law that got passed recently, which got put into share buybacks, they're making more money. They've never been wealthier yet. All this stuff is happening in the middle of that. So if we're talking about projecting forwards, what happens in a year or two when we all realize that the economy is just a fucking illusion? And so someone's winning and it's not us, which is the meta point. For me, it feels like all of this should have us thinking, if things aren't great now, what does it mean for us? And definitely fast forward 2 years, what's my situation as an individual in this in 2 years? So for me, like my motivation, if there's any in this, is to try and get people, members of the creative class, to start thinking about what else could be, what new models there could be, and challenge the existing conventions, because the existing convention is driving us all off a fucking cliff. And we spoke a bit about this before, like generationally, the people in the way of that change are usually my age or a little bit older. They've got a mortgage, maybe a kid or two, if they're going to pay for their college, and they've known one way of doing things their whole career, and they've got a nice corner office, and they are not fucking interested in change. You know, I'm like, you know, you're 4 or 5 years out, I think I'll be all right, Jack, and I don't want to learn, I don't want to retrain, I don't want to like have ideas I have challenged, I don't want to create instability. And the problem is, they're at the controls of this vehicle that's being driven off a cliff. So one of the questions I'd like us to ask is, how the fuck do we get them away from the controls? And I feel if I was advising a company, I'd be asking that question as well. You know, do we have career coasters at the wheel here? Because those are the people that are going to take the industry, their company, and you off the cliff with it. So that's something we really need to think about. I saw a play while I was writing this, and at the very end was Tom Stoppard, Travesties, which is a super fast, high content play. But at the end he said, you're either revolutionary or you're not. And I thought that was such a succinct analysis of the mindset I need to have. I've got a kid, I've got a mortgage, all that shit. But I'm invested in trying to create a new future for me, but also trying to like do it in an open source way that leaves pathways. We'll have these discussions so we can all work out how to do things differently. But I think really something to take away, I think, is you're either a revolutionary or you're not, because the way things are being done isn't going to lead to a good place. So I kind of drawing it to a certain conclusion, the agency model itself. So I think we have a smallish window of like building new models. Everyone here, I think, is going to have a career. We're just going to work out what that career is. You know, if and when shit hits the fan and we have a dramatic collapse in the industry, everyone here is going to be okay. And actually, if you look at the wider context of the era of machine learning, AI, and automation, I think the group of humans who are going to be most successful are the creative class, because we're creative. And actually, the things that we do separate us from the machine. And not many industries or people can say that. I'm very positive despite all this. So I'm not going to leave at the end of this and then we're going to talk about it. But I do think we need to get on with it. So I want to talk a little about the agency model. Now, I think if you draw a logical conclusion, what's happened is less work in the market. People are competing over a smaller pool of work. They're driving their price point down to secure the work, doing loss leading work. They're offshoring work. So Publicis had a plan for their 2020 vision of going from 7,000 people in offshore markets in India and Thailand and other places to 12,000 within 2 years. So what that lets you do is reduce the price point. I also believe it lets you reduce the quality of the output, not by virtue of the culture, just the friction of actually working cross-border, cross-cultures is hard. And I don't think Marcel's going to be the solution to that. So the logical end game is something that's always frustrated me about brands is something else, which is the procurementization of design, which isn't even a word, don't quote me on it. But if anyone here has ever had to negotiate with a procurement department, you've had a great relationship, you've kicked something off with an interesting client with a fashion brand, Nike, and everyone's like, let's do it. Oh, you've got to chat to procurement. And this procurement department also negotiates photocopier leasing for Nike. And they go to their checklist and they say, oh, look, oh, we pay $130 an hour for visual designers. And then, well, we're $250 an hour, so clearly that's not going to work. But what I think is happening is too many agencies and creators and people capitulate. And what's happening is we're getting the price point dropping through the fucking floor. And people offshoring can also push their price point lower and lower. So there's less work and everyone's getting paid less for their work. And I think we're all beginning to see the effects of what's happening across the agency spectrum because of that. Agencies are folding. They're being consolidated. Have you noticed all the like global creative directors being like off like a fucking gangster movie? They're like disappearing every week and they're not popping up again. So what fucking happens is it's so illogical, because what happens if we create an environment of exchange for our creative services that's so broken that we no longer deliver a good quality product? They've destroyed the market that they want to tap into. That's not going to fucking work, and we need to work out how that works beyond that, or just get out the way. So it's actually completely counterintuitive for a fucking $6 billion brand to like squeeze a 30-person agency for $20 an hour less, or whatever it is. It doesn't make any sense. I find it so frustrating. Is anyone in procurement here? No, okay. All right. So there's not much space. If we can't be expected to make no profit. The problem with that also is I grew up in an era where the agency model was fertile, and it was there was good money to be made in the model. Right now, agencies, I think, spit out, if you're lucky, single-digit profits, maybe double digits if you're lucky. I went to Soda last year. I think the average was 11%. 2 years ago, it was 11%. And it's declining. It's going down. It's harder to run an agency. I think you're going to see the bottom of the market get chewed up because you just can't be profitable. But what concerns me about that, the era that I kind of grew up in, so to speak, it was really fertile and you could get emerging talent. Kids, yeah, just fucking work on some dumb shit for a week and we'll throw it at the wall with Nike. And all this creative work and collaboration took place. That's all going because there's no spare budget to hire that extra person. There's no spare budget for experiments because we're in this kind of time of famine, which is insane again, if you think about the wider economic picture. Now that concerns me about the industry that we care about being creativity relies on fresh talent, people who are going to challenge the status quo and create new things. And if we don't have the conditions for that, that's not good for our fucking industry. And again, I think we as agency side and clients kind of have to resolve that. There's a flood of talent leaving the industry, heading into tech. You can get better pay. You can get your fucking on-site dental and get your washing done and your ass wiped at work, which you don't get the agency. You're mostly wiping clients' asses. But ultimately, the agency model is also bizarre because there's not many industries that enjoy negative economies of scale. So you start an agency, you know, you take a project and you hire some friends and then you realize you've got a fucking agency into 20, 30 people. And then as you grow it, it gets more expensive to run. You have to pay more for your people to compete at a certain standard. You have to get more office space, hire all the support staff, and you make less profit as you grow. It's insane. It's an insane business model. Like there's no economies as a scale. So you really need to think about that as well. So I'd right now like to be small. I'd like to be a 20-person shop, like, you know, wait, kind of navigating our way through the kind of cyclone everything's going through. But look, the principal thing I nearly want to finish on is the primary tumor in this case, which I believe is the pay-for-time client service model. I think decades ago, our industry, we traveled to this island prison where we'd somehow agree that the vast and diverse range of creativity that we have and can express in all kinds of different ways could be homogenized and ground up like sausage meat to be sold at market, you know? And it's fucking insane that, you know, someone with 20 years experience will charge maybe 50% more, 100% more than someone who's just come out of college. And it's basically a fixed odds. It's, you know, you linearly yoke time and effort to revenue. And it makes the agency model a fixed odds, limited stakes game. So for me, the biggest thing that I believe we need to break into Creative Cost or demonstrate we can break is breaking that link between time and money. Because your fucking 20 years or 10 years isn't worth that hour of time. It's everything you put in to create that hour of time. And it's that ridiculous thing with a spanner on LinkedIn. The guy walks up and fixes it and wants $1,000 and I hate LinkedIn. But anyway, so the point is, the only way we're going to do that, and this is my journey, is unless we in the creative class can demonstrate the ability to build models that will attract a seasoned investor, so the kind of person invests in startups or pension funds looking for 2x, 3x, 10x, or 100x if you're like strapped to like a VC rocket ship, is unless we can demonstrate the ability to build those models with those the potential for the returns and the exponential upside, we're going to be trapped on that fucking prison island. And that prison island is sinking, and it's not a good place to be. So my challenge to you, and my challenge to myself, has been what models can we build and define that do change the terms of business for the creative class, because they need to change. And we need to uncouple this being paid for time, have what we do kind of be kind of homogenized as being paid for time. So I think the agency life is for me, was a privilege. I saw the world, literally. And I saw lots of, we'll have all here been across 5 different verticals, experienced like deep insights across lots of different industries, had access to really senior stakeholders, seen things that most people, other people wouldn't see. But my mindset with all that was boot camp. That I saw this and what am I gonna do with it, is my question. Not am I gonna keep doing it. So I don't denigrate anyone going in the agency or building an agency. It's the most challenging thing you can do. You learn a lot, but I think it gets to the point, if you've done that, if you've been far enough, I think the interesting thing to do and motivating thing to do is to say, what am I gonna do with that? And what models can we build? I'm probably gonna finish up on that. Just leaving like a little bit of message up. I do think agencies are viable as businesses. I think you have to be great. I think if you're really fucking great at what you do and you care about it and you do it well, there's a simple equation I've always believed in, which is there are more good projects than there are good teams. It's as simple as that. There's more good projects than there are good teams. And if you're good and great in the world of perfect information, which we don't live in, you will have a functioning, healthy business. It's very exciting. If you're shit, you're fucked. Because the industry is just gonna be eaten up from the bottom up, like 10% at a time. And that's probably a good thing, because out of this chaos comes renewal. So I think it's on us to change the terms of business and explore new paths. My path is in the venture space. There's lots of interesting case studies, which isn't today's theme, of people in the creative field who've gone into venture to startups, to work at VC funds, to launch their own companies. And I think there's so much inspiration out there, and I think we should showcase and highlight that. My ask to you, which is I've imposed upon myself, is that as we take that journey, to make it an open source journey, like take that software development mindset of sharing what you've learned, sharing in the moment, sharing what works and what doesn't work, sharing frameworks and business models, because I think it's on all of us, if we care about creativity and each other, to kind of build paths for each other. Because if we do this agency stuff, then it's pretty fucking obvious what's going to do. So that's my commitment to my tribe, is to do that, do it openly. That's why I write. Everything I'm learning, I write and share in real time, even the good stuff and the bad stuff. And I just ask you to do kind of hopefully take on the same mindset, because I'm super excited about the coming chaos, about the Armageddon, the apocalypse, not religiously, but metaphorically, because there wouldn't be much to do after that if it was the religious version. But I'm super excited, because out of this chaos will come renewal. And I think we, as a people, have the greatest opportunity to define these new models. And I think, for me, the biggest thing to look at is this intersection of capital and creativity, because I think that's where venture happens, and that's where opportunity happens, and that's the path I'm on. And I'm going to have a drink, and I think I'm done for that part.
So, you just heard from Jules. I hope you survived the F-bombs. But that's what you get when someone is genuinely passionate about their industry. We really wouldn't have it any other way. The discussion went on for a long time after this, so if you'd like to be part of these types of live sessions in the future, just visit us at betaworks-studios.com. Some events are private to members, but many are open to the public. You should come and hang out. You never know, you might make it into the podcast. You can follow Jules on Twitter at EasyJules. That's EasyJules. His two State of the Digital Nation pieces are both published on Medium, and his new creative capital studio, Factory, is at factory.com. That's FKTRY.com. If you enjoyed this episode, you should check out the episode of Builders where we talk about building experiences in the age of Instagram. Just some more smart people talking about the future of creativity.
The Sistine Chapel's ceiling wasn't designed to be a selfie moment.
And if you're still feeling a little apocalyptic, then indulge yourself further by listening to tech soothsayer Jaron Lanier on why you should delete your social media accounts.
It's mankind has real problems to face.
Yeah.
And if we can't face them with collective sanity, we will die. So I view this as an existential issue.
Right.
All of these little nuggets and more are available when you subscribe on iTunes and wherever else you usually listen to podcasts. Be sure to check back with us every Tuesday for new episodes of Builders. And I'm excited to announce we are now on social media. We can be found on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at BuildersPod. That's at BuildersPod. And also hashtag BuildersPodcast for all things Builders. If you just click on the description box, it's all linked there. Be sure to follow along with us and give us your thoughts, feedback, suggestions for the future. We definitely look forward to hearing from all of you and getting to know our listener base better. Again, check out our calendar for more talks at betaworks-studios.com. Until next time, I'm Leila Oweda. Happy building from all of us at the BetaWorks Studios team. See you soon!